This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
In a warming world, we picture sea level rise creeping up very slowly, measured in inches or millimeters. Maybe not. According to new science, at the end of the last five ice ages, the seas rose several meters per century, more than 10 feet. Elko Rowling is a professor of ocean and climate change at the University of Southampton in Australia. He's the co-author of the paper, Sea Level Variability Over Five Glacial Cycles, that was just published in the journal Nature Communications. Dr. Rowling, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Hello, Alex. How are you?
Good, good. Why did you take on this study?
It's the sort of work that we have been engaged in for almost two decades now. So one of the things what it drives it is curiosity, is about what has been happening in our natural past before man started to interfere with climate, and you know, to get a context of what has been changing in a natural sense.
Okay, now I understand how we could measure sea level rise in past ages, but how can we know how fast it happened, right down to a century time period, which is rather short in geological time?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So what we need for that is we need continuous records of sea level change in a high time resolution, and we developed that with a new methodology of using past salinity changes in the Red Sea. And what we recently then added to that is a very strong time control to that. So we have a highly resolved record with a very good time control. And that's when we can start to look at rates of change.
How do the Asian monsoons fit into that research?
The Asian monsoons have been affecting the regional climate, and that regional climate is in that sector is recorded in cave sediments. And these cave deposits and stalagmites, they can be really accurately dated with the uranium series, a radioactive decay. And that really accurate dating of these climate time series, we could transfer to the Red Sea sea level record that we derived from the Red Sea seafloor sediments. And in that way, we could derive a very good chronology or timescale for the sea level changes.
Can you talk us through one case that you studied? What was Earth like then and what happened?
Well, one of the most studied cases for sea level change at the last ice age is around about 14,600 years ago. Sea level made a jump, and that jump has been dated with fossil corals in other methods to about 4.5 meters per century. But what we can now do with this new method is we can look at other ends of ice ages, at the ends of five ice ages. So first thing, we corroborate that estimate from the corals for the last deglaciation, but we can now also find it for four other deglaciations. And we find basically numbers that are very similar, especially for an event that was of the order of about 240,000 years ago and 330,000 years ago. Those two events were very similar, of the order of 4 to 5 meters per century.
4 to 5 meters, that's over 16 feet for our American listeners. Now, we should stress that sea level rise comes from land-based ice and not the more well-known melting of the sea ice cover on the ocean at the North Pole. Where is land ice melting now?
Well, land ice today is melting in the Greenland ice sheet, and especially the West Antarctic ice sheet and the Antarctic Peninsula. At the moment, the East Antarctic ice sheet is only contributing very little mass in terms of its loss, but that there is a potential there for that to speed up quite a bit as well. But we have to bear in mind that these very high rates, they are at the ends of ice ages. So we're basically talking about periods when there was almost three times as much ice on the planet as there is now, because there was a really large ice sheet, larger than the modern Antarctic ice sheet on North America. And there was an equally very large ice sheet on Europe of the size of, you know, several times the Greenland ice sheet. So there was a lot more ice, and as a result, you would expect, and that's what we now find, a lot more melt contribution. And that is what we found in our research, is that we have about 120 sea level rise events where they are smaller, but they are happening also at times when there was less ice on the planet. These rates are actually for the future more important. They are smaller rates. Yeah, so I guess maybe if we want to look at the future, we should look at those smaller rates that happen in between these large deglaciations.
Right. So because we're starting out with less ice than, you know, the whole of North America is not covered with ice as much of it was, I guess we are not looking at that worst case scenario of a 5 meter per century sea level rise. Am I right on that?
Exactly. So what we now have is, you know, in time to when we had two times the amount of ice of today or less, the rates that we find were below 2 meters per century. And when we are constraining it further down to times when there was about the same amount of ice as today on the planet, the rates are between 1 and 1.5 at most, meters per century. So we're looking at smaller but still quite large rates.
Yes, it would have a huge effect on the world's ports and major cities if sea level even went up 1 meter when you add the storm surge and things like that.
Exactly.
Now, once this process of ice melt starts, does it look to be irreversible?
It's what we're beginning to find is when we start seeing signals of ice reduction. So every time we see sea level starts to go up in our record, then in about 68% of the rises, and we're talking about 120 cases that we studied, so statistically a good number. In 68% of those cases, it's about 400 years of rise until we hit the maximum rate. So, and in about 85% of the cases, it's 600 years. So what we're beginning to see is that once the ice begins to reduce, once you start seeing that reduction really going, until you get the peak rates of reduction is hundreds of years. So that would suggest that situation could well be irreversible because it takes so long for these large ice sheets to start responding. And as a result, once they are responding, it's like a freight train. It takes long to start moving, and then it also takes long to stop when you hit the brakes full.
I'm really stunned by what you're saying. Are you saying that we're imposing a constantly rising sea and ever-changing coastline on all the humans and animals and plants to come for hundreds of years?
Well, I'm not saying we are imposing, but what I am saying is that to me the signal is very much like this: is that, you know, where warming of the planet is potentially irreversible. If we reverse the CO2 emissions, we may have already committed ourselves to several hundreds of years of sea level rise, simply by what has started to work over the last 100 to 150 years.
Professor Elko Rowling, it's my understanding that the past transitions from an icy world to a warmer one developed over very long periods, perhaps stimulated by relatively slight changes in the Earth's orbit. Can we really compare those slower changes to what might happen as we change the whole atmosphere with our greenhouse gases?
Yeah, that's the big, you know, that's the elephant in the room, really. The big question is whether the natural changes were really slow. I mean, the orbital changes, the Earth-Sun system, those orbital changes are very slow, but those are really only the trigger. And what we see happening is that as soon as we trigger a deglaciation with the orbital changes, most of the deglaciation is actually carried out by a feedback between temperature and CO2 and other greenhouse gases like methane. Now, currently, we are raising the CO2 concentration, the greenhouse gas concentration in the atmosphere by our anthropogenic actions, maybe 100 or more times faster than those natural feedback processes. The only thing you have to worry with sea level is whether the ice sheets could actually follow that quickly. Maybe they are too slow. They are what we would call rate limited. If they are rate limited, then we could force the atmosphere as fast as we like. but we might not be able to get the ice to respond faster than it is possible. Now, that's a big discussion. We don't know if there is a rate limitation or not. There's quite a lot of discussion about that. So what we are coming up with numbers are for natural responses to the current CO2 forcing, and it could actually be worse if, you know, our fast forcing has a worse effect. But, that's really for us to keep on monitoring. If we look at the way that the sea level rise currently is happening, it's quite slow, you would say, with about 3 millimeters per year. But it projects to quite a high number, to about a meter by 2100, because it is the early phase of the acceleration of the ice sheets that we are looking at, together with thermal expansion and some other effects.
Your paper talks about meltwater pulse. What is that?
A meltwater pulse is really when we are in a deglaciation. So basically, we are in a fast phase of ice reduction. Sometimes there are pulses in those where we see a peak reduction of the ice sheets. And that is the current thought is that we are looking at some sort of dynamic process that actually allows the ice streams to accelerate to a maximum rate towards the ocean where they calve off. And so that would then give you your maximum rate of rise in a deglaciation period. So the deglaciation period overall could be 10,000 years long, but in the last deglaciation, for example, you had a 400-year period with about 4.5 meters per century rise inside that long period. So it's really a short maximum event within a longer deglaciation. And what we are finding is that all of these have rates of the order of meters per century.
Now, I'd like you to relate what this paper says and what your current research is compared to the current round of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Does your paper go with the estimates that have been published so far? Will they have to be revised?
What we're basically seeing is that past deglaciation events are actually quite coherent with the most recent one, which was already quite well known from fossil corals research. So in a sense, our values are nothing new to the IPCC, because they had already one value like that that they are taking into account. The only thing is, what they didn't have is an estimate of these deglaciation rates that had to do with times of ice sheets smaller than present. So basically, the IPCC has been very much looking at what is the maximum amount we could get off the ice sheets, such as the last interglacial period, about 125,000 years, when sea level went somewhere between 6 and 9 meters above the present. That was more like the magnitude of rise. What we are now beginning to see is that we could put a number, a likely number, on the naturally possible rate of rise for such an event of the order of 1 to 1.5 meters per century.
Tell us about the number of scientists and the amount of time it takes to assemble this record of sea level changes for the past 500,000 years.
One would have to measure that in a period of, we started this sort of work around about 2000, and so we're talking about 14 years, and there would have been, on average, I would say, 3 persons working on it every year. So we're talking about something like 14 times 3 man years of work, 42 man years of work. You know, it's not always full-time just on this. There are other offshoots as well, but that's the sort of effort that goes into it, yeah.
Now, is it possible, Professor Rowling, to go back even further looking for evidence of a large, rapid sea level change that could teach us what we could expect with human-induced climate change? Can we go back millions of years?
Well, we've recently started to divert our attention from the Red Sea to the Mediterranean Sea, where the signal-to-noise ratio is worse, so we don't get very accurate records like we do in the Red Sea, but we can go back to 5.3 million years ago. But you have to bear in mind that what we are losing there is the finesse to the method where we can actually start to get really good rates of rise. I mean, we could get you know, average rates of rise over a couple of thousand years or so, but we don't really get that time control or the actual signal-to-noise ratio to really start talking about these meters per century values. So I think that's a very long time away that we can do that on older records than 500,000.
As we finish up, is there more exciting science coming up that can help us further understand this process of a climate shift?
Yeah, what we're beginning to do now is what we found in the Red Sea early on in about 2007, 2008 is that in the last interglacial, there have been there potentially have been a couple of fluctuations of the sea level rise above 0 meters, so above the present. So when the sea level of the last interglacial went up to between 6 and 9 meters above the present, it seems to have been doing that in stops and starts and actually reversed for a time as well and then went up again. And that's what we're currently beginning to look at with some new techniques to see if we can refine that and firm that up, and especially if we can actually find corroborating evidence from other areas for that fluctuation. If we can, then we can start to look at rates of rise in detail above the present rate. So that would be directly relevant to deglaciating from the current condition to sea level several meters higher. And what we're beginning to see is that the rates that were involved with that were, again, of the order of 1 to 1.5 meters per century. Now, if that bears out, then that really starts to support our case that these rates may well be relevant to the future as well.
We've been talking about the latest sea level science with Dr. Elko Rowling. He's a professor of ocean and climate change at the University of Southampton and Australian National University. His latest paper, Sea Level Variability Over 5 Glacial Cycles, was published September 25th, 2014, in the journal Nature Communications. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Yeah, that was my pleasure. I mean, it's always good to try and sort of convey this information to the wider audience rather than just in the technical journals. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
All right. I'm Alex Smith reporting for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.